Because we're not going to start social justice today.
Good,
man.
Oh, we're not.
I wasn't ready.
Oh, yeah, you were.
Man. I was ready.
I probably wasn't ready, but I could have been. I have.
Based on what we were talking about yesterday, I thought I had like an issue.
He took off work and everything. I'm like, sorry.
Sorry.
Took a sick day. The Lord led otherwise.
I was going to work till 2. But what juked me is because we had talked about some of that stuff yesterday. Maybe you had gone down a rabbit trail after that conversation.
Yeah. Well, what happened was I came across, it began blossoming in my mind even bigger. I had a conversation last night with Shally about it. And one with Tom, but ultimately, it's not done. Like the rubble hadn't all fell yet, and like now, there's a video by Tim Keller that somebody posted, and Justin Peters. Shot a couple pellets at him for it. I know that's shocking for y'all.
Yeah.
But just to break that news. So anyway, I had Elihu on my mind and Job, you know, like I had finished listening to all John's messages. John MacArthur obviously is preaching a four-part.
At least four-part. Three. He's only finished three, and he's been out of the pulpit
the
last two. And the fourth's going to be the best.
Oh, yeah.
He's led me up to this bar and left me hanging.
Yeah.
And then he takes off from the country for 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's how you do it. Save the good wine for last. It's like this new Frozen movie. They've been saying the Frozen movie's coming out since, anyway.
It's like incredible. They played the first one, and then like 15 years later, the second one.
Yeah.
I didn't forget about the first one.
You gotta go.
Kids the same age.
Yeah. New bunch of kids.
Those must be good.
See, that's how evangelism works.
But they like, can put out another.
You can have this joy too.
Other than just. Keller, I think he put out another.
John did?
No.
Peters? Yeah, he did. So now even that has emerged. So I think in light of I don't want to step onto a professional field with my wee tea pads, you know, like I study as much as I can, but obviously, I just would rather have a better handle on it before we. So maybe to give one more week, because I feel like a lot of stuff is being thrown around, like Marxism, for example. It's like a hipster thing to say yes, Marxist, but who actually ever read Marx? And so. I want to go back. I went back to try to read Marx and refresh myself on him. And then he got his stuff from a guy named Hegel. He got his stuff from Immanuel Kant. And and John's not done. Justin Peters and Tim Keller are poking each other in the eye. So, I'm gonna wait maybe one more week and
let the dust settle.
Yeah, and be a Elihu, you know. Wait,
Elihu did have a dramatic effect to his.
He didn't do any good in the end.
It did not.
And so that may happen, you know. It's like, well, bravo for waiting, but you still swung and missed. So sit down.
Still swung and missed.
And I might. So. But I really wanted us to do it because I thought, you know, it's a good. I do have a secret thought about it.
What?
I do have a secret thought.
A secret thought.
So you don't know if you'll wait with the same suspense as you do with John. It is coming.
It's coming.
He'll be gone for a few weeks, and then he'll release the thought.
A trip.
Surprise release.
On Monday, we'll get the digital to say, is
here.
Going back to Cali, eh?
Something
in California.
Yeah.
Be there for a couple weeks.
That's what they say over there, Eureka.
And that's to go see John MacArthur, isn't it?
True. True.
When is that?
No, I'm not going back. So anyway, I did think it would be good, you know, speaking of John MacArthur, one thing he's always talking about that's really good is discernment. And Tim does that a lot, and it's like, you know, it would just be I would have fun with it with y'all. Just so basically, when we come back next week, it's just a vomit on the table of what what you've been hearing, what you've been hearing, and here we are. Like, okay, obviously we got to have some kind, because I'm even noticing that this thing, and I'm getting into it some here, but this is connected to like the utopian, that's Marxist, you know, the political stuff. Make America Great Again is ultimately Marxist. Did you breathe deep on that?
Quiet statement you just made there.
Yeah, and so what it's like there's this subtle idolatry of men putting their hope rather than in the new creation, in the kind of environment we can create if we move and shake and elect and anyway, it's always, you know, we're moving towards something, but you never arrive to, like, every politician that's ever run has been moving towards something. So anyway, on the more origin story of death and judgment in Noah, we go for this week, because we took the first week on covenants to establish the centrality of the gospel, and that all the covenants stand in a relation to the gospel. And then the second week we dealt with the Adamic covenant, to put that nice and scholarly, Adamic. And obviously the next one is Noah. And it's kind of funny to me. You can read a whole book on covenants and nobody says it much about it. It's like, yeah, there was a covenant with Noah. And now that I've studied it and in this study, seeing more, I see what an ignorant thing I did early on. Like, what do you mean you don't have anything to say? It was a worldwide flood, you know? It wasn't real significant, you know? Like, just zoom on past.
Scotch right over.
Yeah, tell that to the dinosaurs, you know, or whoever was here. So anyway, as the intro into dealing with it, though, I was reminded Jason Myers in the Revelation class when I had him for New Testament. He said when he was his first pastorate in Kentucky, he was the worship leader, the pastor, and the youth pastor all together. And he announced he was going to be doing some sermons on Revelation. And one of the kids had heard that Jason also had collected baseball cards when he was younger. And this kid was all excited. He came running in with his Revelation cards. He had found some pack of Revelation. It was like, this is the flying beast, and this is the... And the kid was like so excited to hear about it. He said, I can't wait till I see the flying eagle and all this stuff. And so Jason said he knew he needed to teach on that little word called genre. Obviously, there's not going to be the world's not going to become a comic book. And so he had to burst the bubble, that little kid. So I bring up that word genre to lead us into this, that the Noahic covenant is nested into a story. So it's not an epistle. So we kind of have to remind ourselves, I think, that we're reading a narrative. When Jeremy and I was talking about some of that at the Lawson conference. He's a really good little article. Some of y'all are interested in that. He was texting me. But I know Jeremy Poe would be for sure. Anyway, so obviously the way Genesis is going to teach that, for example, the wages of sin is death, is not by saying the wages of sin is death. It's going to be by saying, and he died, and he died, and he died, and he died. And what is it communicating? The day you eat of it, you shall surely die. Yeah. And so how do we read then the story of Noah so that we get the covenant God made with him accurate? First thing I want to point out contextually here is that the story of Noah is bracketed in between by the author of Genesis. The author of Genesis, who was Moses, ultimately, the Lord, is a mastermind. If you ever get a chance to, I've been for about a year reading a commentary on Genesis in the mornings and blowing brain sockets everywhere. The structure of this thing is just amazing. It's artistic to the max. But anyway, so Noah, for example, his story is placed in between the a 10-person genealogy from Adam, and then a 10-person genealogy from Shem, who was Noah's son. So Noah was the 10th son from Adam in Genesis 5, and Abraham is the 10th son from Shem. What that achieves is two things. It shows the necessary linkage of Adam to Abraham. So Noah is the bridge there. That's one reason he tells a story. The other is to justify the story of Abraham, the need to carry the torch on. In other words, the Noahic covenant failed. So those are the two main motives that commentators will point out. So that being said, I got mine open. I don't know if you have a phone or you just want to listen, but I'll make some comments here to set this up, get them recorded here. The story begins in Genesis 5, then with this lineage of Adam, which comes right after the incident with Cain and Abel. And God intervened and gave Seth, which means the appointed. And men then began to call on the name of the Lord. So it begins with a state of death looking for life. That's what it is as Adam's genealogy goes on. And as one Puritan said, Genesis 5 is the patriarchal death toll bell, where it just rings and he died. And he died, and he died. It's just a funeral. 10 caskets coming through. But there's a note of hope in it, right, with Enoch. This man walks with God and is taken. So he's sort of like a Melchizedekian type figure here of the resurrection. And he walks with God. And so there's some note of hope. You know, God intervened despite the horribleness of what happened with Cain and gave another son. So he's going to fulfill, you know, the 3:15 promise, even when it looks horrible. And so you see that note of hope. Well, then at the end of the chapter, Lamech, Noah's father, which is not incidentally the other Lamech to the other seed of the serpent, who was wicked and et cetera, another artistic thing. But he says this one will give us rest. And so obviously the reader sees, okay, the promise is coming through him. So he's pictured as a second Adam, as a new Adam bringing about a new creation. In Noah's mind, he was looking forward to the very same thing we're looking forward to right now. And for all he knew, it was about to happen. And he was a seed. Which is the point. I know some people won't like this. Maybe some of y'all won't like this. But just being honest with you, when he says Noah walked with God, it means what it says. He was righteous. I mean, it don't mean he sinned a little. It's not what it says. You see at the end of the story, of course he was a sinner. But the phrase walked with God was just used with Enoch, who walked with God, and he was given life. So obviously he's a type of keeping the law. And walk originally was used in the garden. You know, the Lord walked with him. Walk is also used in Deuteronomy 30, which is part of the Pentateuch, and which always was together from the beginning, these first five. For I've set before you death and life, curses and blessings, if you walk in my ways. So walking in his ways is pictured as being righteous, and of course Noah appears that way, keeping all kind of commandments, meticulously building the ark the way the Lord wanted to do it. There's more parallels I can even go through here. Genesis 8, for example, the Lord sends a wind, and it's just like creation at the beginning, the Spirit over the waters, be fruitful, multiply. Just there's so many parallels of where Noah is presented as a second Adam, a new Adam, a renewed attempt to keep the covenant. Now, that being said, therefore, when you look at the story, which, by the way, real quick, you see this contrast in chapter 6. You got the wicked sons of God intermarrying, and then, therefore, the Lord decides to judge, and then it's contrasted with Noah, blameless. He's the only reason the race was saved. And he walked with God, at contrast there. My understanding of that is, if you read the story right, the way the author wants us to, Genesis 5 describes God naming Adam, and who is made in his image, and then Adam naming Seth, who is made in his image. So this naming is, God is presented in Genesis 5 as the father of all humanity. So it's not awkward to hear something about the sons of God in chapter 6. So I don't any longer hold to the persuasion that it's referring to angels. In my opinion, I'm with John Calvin and most good scholars, and Sproul and other people, other heavyweights, that, is referring to Adam's children who were wicked. And then, there's a couple other things to justify it. They saw, just like Adam and Eve saw the fruit, you know, and they took, and same Hebrew words are used. So they just did what was right in their own eyes, intermarried with the line of Cain. So that's how I take it. Noah didn't. And so he's righteous, etc. Why did it matter to intermarry? Because you had to keep the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent separate for the coming Messiah, etc. So, therefore, when God says to Noah in verse 18, I will establish my covenant, he didn't even clarify what covenant. What do you mean, my covenant? Well, obviously, the one, it's something already there. And a really good Hebrew scholar, William Dumbrell, in his book on it, argues the construction here and everything. It's obviously implying the covenant of creation and everything that was already there is being given to Moses. So that would be the three influences of the Adamic covenant we saw last time. Number one, remember the comment that you can't know a person unless they reveal something to you. So we already know all this stuff about God. We don't remember what it's like to sit there in an initial creation and not know his attributes until the curtain is pulled back and they're unveiled. So the goodness of God is put on display in chapter 1. The righteousness of God in chapter 2. He requires obedience for life. And then the gracefulness of God in chapter 3, that he's going to rectify all this wrong. And so the gracefulness and righteousness create that tension I've been talking about that finds resolution eventually in the cross. So all of that, I'm arguing, is being given to Noah whenever he says, I'm establishing my covenant with you, my commitment to, in grace, fulfill the covenant of works through the Genesis 3:15 promised coming seed. Now, that's why covenant is mentioned when you're just looking at the story of Noah on both ends of it. God mentions the covenant with him at the beginning, and then just the story is told, you know, like he builds the ark, enters the ark, survives the ark, my brother, leaves the ark, and receives the covenant again at the end. So it's just like Adam, where once everything was settled in creation, then God gave him the covenant. Same thing with Noah. In chapter 9, he blessed him, be fruitful, multiply. Only you shall not do this one thing. It's all kind of parallels. And so I'm arguing that Noah was given a call to fulfill the covenant of works. And so he was to be like Adam. The problem is he was a little too much like Adam. And in his fall, the author shows that. He sins with a piece of fruit. He uncovers his nakedness. Someone clothes him in grace. There's a poem of blessing and curses. Only absolute refusal could not see the parallels. So he gets out of the boat and falls on his face, pretty much. Then you notice at the end of chapter 9, it says, so all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. So his genealogy that starts in chapter 5 is basically telescoped out. And right in the middle of it, it's just telescoped out. And you know, we pull the chronicle of this guy's life and undo the scroll and look at the whole thing. And then at the end, he just says, and he died. So, like I said, the point and the tolling bell rings for him. And so the point of pulling his out is to show the link, so that the people of Israel who originally read this would know, basically like a Moana moment on that movie where like she learns who her ancestors are. they were to realize, like we've been given the torch from Abraham, who got this from Adam. Like, we are special, you know, to the Creator. So the story ends in chapter 10, therefore, with saying death will have to continue to look for life through another seed, because though Noah had a call like Adam, he also had a fall like Adam. And that's why I think Hebrews 11 ultimately presents Noah as a man of faith. He was a preacher of righteousness, but he ended up not being righteous himself and had to be a man of faith and look ahead. Of course, we know from 1 Peter, Peter uses him that way, pointing forward to Christ. So the end, if you were reading the story, it ends with his line of Shem, which, just real quick, is the Hebrew word for name. So remember, God began naming them man. And so Shem is given the name in the sense of, it's an expression of Noah's hope for the human race through him. The seed is still coming through him. And beautifully, the author in chapter 10 shows the line of Shem, the name, separate at one point with Peleg and Joktan, and it says the one guy's name was Peleg because the land was divided in his day. And when you read the genealogy of Shem right over here in chapter 11, right after the Tower of Babel, it picks up at Joktan and then goes to Abraham. So it peeled off at Peleg. So the line of Shem did this. And once you notice that, this became the seed of the serpent again. And that's where you get the Tower of Babel, which is not accidental, where he says, let us make a name for ourselves. Nor when he calls Abraham, who came out of Ur of the Chaldees, which is in Babylon, and I will make your name great. Isn't the story beautiful? And so the name, the Shem, hope of Noah, is being carried out through Abraham. That's the meaning of it. And you have a contrast there of man doing it and God doing it. Right there. It will not be done by man from the bottom up, but from God from the bottom down. So that the Noahic covenant has all three elements, the same three elements of the Adamic covenant here in summary. He had a call to carry out, therefore, that original covenant and bring about the new creation. That means it was covenant of works. And I hope I've established that through that walking with God thing and the Adam parallel, since we know the Adam was the covenant of works. But just like Adam, there was a promise of grace. And ultimately, that's why Noah was saved. At the end of the covenant, he offers a sacrifice. And God says based on that, he won't allow the earth to be flooded again, which people have misunderstood that, including myself. That was only to comfort people, you know, because the next time they saw rain, they would all freak out. Understandably so. And so the Lord kindly designated the rainbow to be the bow hung up on the wall there. He's not having his arrow in his hand anymore. Kill people with water, but it's not like that's that comforting, because Peter says he's going to do it in fire. And so the next one's worse. But the thing Peter's bringing out with the Noahic covenant is it is a good covenant. even though Noah didn't bring it about, the Lord is holding the world in place.
What'd you say?
Holding the world together in place, seed time, harvest, seeds. You know, all this stuff. What an incredible thing to see, though, that winter exists because of Christ.
Yeah.
Like flowers bloom and leaves turn colors, and like this is all God, all of this stuff being worked. As Jeremy Poe is bringing out the main character, like all the other characters find their person purpose in relation to the main character. And in a story, and so it is here. Incredible. It's a good presuppositional point, too, that the unbeliever didn't have any basis for the uniformity of nature and the stability of the planet. You know, amazing thing. So, just like Adam then, because he failed, he's looking forward. So this is basically the second stanza in the Song of Redemption. And it's still leading on to the completion. So, what's the main thing a Christian should see in this? I would say, other than understanding the covenant, we too, like Noah, should be preachers of righteousness. But the last thing that we talk about getting the last word, and the last thing that's going to be said about us is, and he died. And the tolling bell's going to ring for us. And therefore, like Noah, we should see not only his failure there, but we should see it as a type of Christ. And like Peter said, Christ is ultimately the ark that we are enabled to get in and be judged and saved at the same time. The marvelous thing we saw in Peter, he talks about baptizing your conscience. You know, like the picture is like the baptistry is like a little model of the flooded earth. And supposed to be, anyway, totally misused. But the person being baptized, so I always say I like to get rebaptized, is supposed to be telling everyone, when you see me go down into this water, what you need to see is I was so wicked and am so wicked that like God, I deserve for God to blot me out, to wipe me away from the earth to make way for a good creation. And when you see me come up, it's like that ark coming back up through the water. Because I'm in Christ, my conscience is able to be judged and saved at the same time. And therefore my conscience is clean, because the judgment waters have rained on me. But because I'm in Christ, I survived them. And so it's like a survival from drowning when someone comes up from the baptistry. But, you know, what a thing. What an often overlooked, incredible covenant. With juicy Christology all in it. Anyway, such as it is. So that's the Noah covenant. Was it that bad, Mr. Fuhrer?
I get my age, you'll understand.
And when you get his age, you'll understand.
Get my age, you'll understand. Was it any good?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought it was funny when Jeremy left the room, you were like midway talking, you were just like grabbed him and just.
Yeah, I just went for it.
It was very professional.
Yeah, I just feel like there's so much glory in this story that
I loved it. Yeah, I was eating it up. When you made those parallels, like the Shem, I mean, that's like the genius of Genesis, you know? That's literally like the first thought that came to my mind was just like, golly, like that is so, that is a master stroke of storytelling.
What? We just don't know how to read it. It's so funny because it's like, it's the book that just gets slaughtered by unbelievers. Mm-hmm. You know, as this primitive, stupid, Neanderthal work. And it's like, this thing, like, even books have connections with other books. Mm-hmm. Like, that the scholars even have a word for it called intertextuality. Mm-hmm. Like, one book has a, you know, like in Judges, for example, when you see the homosexuality and then the concubine thrown out or whatever, that reminds you of, you know, Sodom. There's all kinds of things. Crazy. You eventually just stand back from your, like, God inspired it. Like, there's no other way to see. No human author could see all these connections. Anyway, I enjoy going through it again and making sense of it. That is something.
Yeah. Has it failed since?
Yeah. Like God ordained, promised for us to have four seasons. That's, yeah. Like even people who are like, oh, well, you know, naturalist view and it's the hemisphere. Like God didn't even let them have that. Seasons. I got it all. I got the tides. I got the sun, the moon.
I was looking at the moon last night, man. It was so bright. I mean, I literally just walked outside. I did too. I was like, golly, I could like just walk around, like just to think that like we're floating in space on a rock. Like, I just, that's so mind blowing to me. I was actually watching a video, I don't know, a lot of people aren't a fan of him, but the guy's really smart, Neil deGrasse Tyson. He was talking about, he said the newest thing that they're trying to understand is what they call dark gravity. They can't figure out, because a mass is supposed to create gravity, right? So the bigger the mass, the more gravity, and they're just like, what is causing everything in the universe to be? Of course, you know, him not being a Christian, he doesn't realize that's the Lord, but you know, he was basically like saying like there's something called dark gravity. We know it's there mathematically, we can prove it, but we don't know what that mass is. And it's just like, just when you start like, it's just like the further they go into like understanding the universe, it's just like, it's just more things.
Russian doll. And just,
yeah. Yeah, it's just more things for the Lord just to be like, well, you got that one, but you got like an infinite amount of other stuff you don't understand. Like,
I thought of Corey's sermon too, what you're talking about there as well. Both of those songs that he had read it. It wasn't his direct text, but he did reference it that in him all things hold together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's quite a thing. Like, apart from Christ, God doesn't have any reason to hold the universe together. Mm. No motive in his heart to hold it together. That means, like, because of the glory of Christ, like people are profiting from the glory of Christ. People that hate Christ, mm-hmm, are profiting from his glorious position.
What irony.
Yeah.
It's, as, you know, there's no sun, there's no moon in heaven. That's always been an interesting thought. Like, Isaiah talks about that the glory of God will be like the sun. So, like, we'll have some sort of, it's like the sun, but it's, there's no sun in the new heaven. I mean, the new earth. Like, it's, you know, it's here for a purpose, and it's going to be gone. Can you imagine walking around, like, what is this light that's lighting up everything? Mm-hmm. It's just, the glory of God is illuminated.
The light bulbs. The light bulbs.
Jonathan Edwards said he thought it was going to be new colors in the new creation.
There's a guy who wrote a song about that.
Really?
He's famous. I don't know if I can remember his name, but it's a song about new colors.
Oh, is it?
He's well known, but he's from like the 90s. Y'all would all know.
Yeah, he died, didn't he?
I don't know. I remember I had this song
on the iPad
or something. Yeah, he said colors we've never seen before. Yeah. And this is what we're going to be seeing.
Oh, I've heard that before. Richard Mullins.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Is that it? It's not him?
I'll find it here.
Because that's going to bother me. Because I knew I've heard that.
I don't know how. I don't know what Edwards used to... I don't know, but that was Edwards for you. He was an eagle. He just left everybody and went for a trip. Soared. But it's good. It's enjoyable understanding the Bible more. I've enjoyed thus far seeing the outworking of this thing. Well, one thought I had before we came in here was a virgin birth. It's like as each person keeps failing, you begin to, it's like it took, you know, the Lord, like Paul says, there may be a hint of his purpose in 1 Corinthians 1 where he says, what does he say about the Greeks and the, oh, that it pleased God that after the world through its wisdom did not come to know God. And someone has said he waited until the Greeks had just lost, had tried their hardest through wisdom, and the Jew had tried their hardest through morality, you know, before sending Jesus into the world. And a new thought I had, though, was that was just, I was really glorying in Christ about before we came in here, just secretly in my heart, was the virgin birth. That's something that I'm starting to see more glory in now. It's like it's our by birth union with Adam that attaches us to the inherited sin. And so it's like as each person tries who's a descendant of Adam, it almost is like a setup for the virgin birth. And you see like this, you begin to see, like, you mean, like, you're worried about there's one way. It's like, no, there is only one way because there really is only one way. Like, it had to be a virgin birth so that Jesus was not connected to the inherited sin of Adam. And the only way that can happen as if through God creating a new human person in union with Mary, so that he was really man, but at the same time, he was a new man, a new Adam, in neutrality, you know, who then could do again what Adam didn't. But I saw that. I'd never seen that connection before until doing this study. That was good.
I don't know what would. I think we've talked about it. I can't remember what your view on it was. But, it kind of hit me that Job almost, I know he's not always thrown in there as a claim of Christ, but he really seems to have this view that he was righteous, and the community had a view that he was righteous. And he falls, most people think, after, was right after Noah.
Oh, yeah. Before Moses. Most scholars say that's the oldest book in the Bible.
Yeah.
That it was even penned before Moses wrote Genesis.
Hmm.
Not chronologically, but...
Right. You don't hear him thrown out there, but there, it seemed like he was being genuine when he felt like there was no sin.
Yeah, of course.
I guess, is he the right lineage? I guess he stayed on the same line. I don't know how to look at it.
Yeah, there's some hints in there. They mentioned some little people groups, like he was from this land, or the band that attacked his cattle or whatever was one of the seed of the serpent peoples, you know. So it definitely presents him as, like, you know.
Of the right.
Which is hard for us to identify because, like R.C. Sproul puts it, he says, so what's the unity of the people of God? Well, it's a faith. And that's why Hebrews 11 says, by faith, by faith, by faith. So even though they were under the covenant of works, like Paul says in Romans 9, if they were lost, it's because they pursued the law as if it were by works, but not by faith. So you can live under the Mosaic covenant in their day by faith. If after once trying to keep it, you're crushed under that burden and you cry out looking ahead for the coming, like Abraham rejoiced to see my day, you know. So basically he says, like, the people of God before the cross are looking ahead. People of God after the cross are looking back. And that's where we're unified at. None of us can keep it, and we're running to the city of refuge. And so the people before were looking ahead for the promised performance, and we are looking back at the performed promise.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you put it together. According to R.C. Sproul.
Which makes it, before hearing that, for some reason it always seemed more difficult to put together how the Jew would be, like, how did the Jew have faith before Christ?
Mm-hmm.
But that makes it, it seems just as far simple for us to believe something that had already happened and then to believe something that did happen.
Yeah.
Good talk.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes me just seem like it's a lot extremely similar. Same performance, same failure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it helps too. It helps me anyway understand, like, because that is the one difference. Like, we live on the other side of it. We live in the Jeremiah, the days are coming. Like, okay, well, they're here. Everything's already been revealed. The mystery is out. And so we're never really, from the point that we're included in the people of God, we're never really involved except by mistake in pursuing our own righteousness. You know, we can get tangled in it, like Galatians or something, or get off on our assurance or something. But it was actually part of the covenant they were under to try.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they weren't being, like, no one said, you're a legalist, God, I want you to, no, he didn't, you were supposed to keep it. And even though I say you could still have faith, like Paul says, I mean, you were still under it. So, like, if you committed a high-handed sin, it wasn't like it's okay. It's like you're dying.
Yeah. It's quite the thing. Like, so, I mean, it wasn't bad for any of these guys to set out thinking that I'm going to be the guy.
Right. The initial like attempt. They did it or, yeah, he like, was called to. He was supposed to try.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking back to look forward.
Saying?
I'm looking back to look forward.
Looking back to look forward?
Yes, sir.
Tell us what you mean by that.
You know, again, I follow that.
Well, I want to glory in it, so I want to make sure.
Looking back at the cross, okay? To be with the Lord. So.
That is a good way of putting it.
Looking back to look forward. Waiting on a trumpet.
That is a good way of putting it. It reminds me of that Lloyd Jones thing, you know, just looking back, and that propels you.
And so, talking about just before we're saying there, like, reading about one of those martyrs. And I know we don't know our time. I may die before you. But it's they knew their time, like they knew when they were in, what their hand, their day was. It's just an interesting thing. Like, people, they were having conversations, and there was, like, true envy that, like, in, like, a day or two, this guy was going to see the Lord. Just that thought. Like, can you imagine just sitting there? Having like knowing like in 2 days or in a week, you know, and they couldn't sleep at night, you know.
I guess not.
I mean, it was just like
it's like duck season is about to open up.
I know. One guy's mom came to visit him, and she started crying, and he rebuked her, and he said, "Mom, you know what the Lord says: if you love." Anyone more than you love Christ.
Yeah.
Rebuked his mom for crying. He said only joyful tears are allowed. But I just think of, like they were waking up early.
I gotta get this book.
I get you. Know, I'll let you borrow. It's fine. It's just I was sitting there thinking like if you knew, you know. Like you're saying, that's a good analogy. Like duck season times like infinity.
Or for the women, it's like Thanksgiving Day, like tomorrow's Friday.
Yeah.
And Lloyd Jones had something. So those are, I can tell that book is doing a great work for you. I may have to get it after Corey. But I remember Lloyd Jones, his doctor came to see him. He had a couple incidents like that. His doctor came to see him. He could barely talk, and he was just sick, and throat cancer was just... And his doctor came in one day, and he left. He just had this look of pity towards him, you know? And he asked him what was the matter, like Lloyd Jones is asking him. And he says, "I just hate to see, I hate seeing you so sad." And he like repositioned where he could get some words out, and he said he repeated it twice, "Not sad.
Not sad.
Not sad."
I think this new series that Media Gradier that Matthew is putting out.
What is this?
It's going to be, and I'm not 100% certain, so you folks shouldn't say here, but Lamar Jones is going to be a part of it, a major part of it. But I think it goes from most of what happened in the United States since the beginning. So that should be out by G3.
I'll be having to get that. Like a history thing?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Man, y'all definitely have to get that.
It goes against what now? America?
Well, the
Christianity and American history.
Into American history.
Joseph Smith's in the book, or?
It's not a book. It'll be what he does in a DVD.
Like a documentary.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Yeah, he'll be. That's his late night. His late night
Fair
stuff.
Sunshine.
Pretty certain it's supposed to. They'll unfold it. Mm-hmm. G3, I'm pretty sure.
Wow. Yeah, I'd be good. Yeah.
I told him last night, I text Justin, the newest one I found out is the guy who preached his funeral, Lloyd Jones. It must have been a younger guy. I thought, man, what an honor that was. And so he got him, he came to visit, he told him what he wanted preached at his funeral. It was the loveliness of Christ and the abundant entrance into heaven he has bought for his people. And so he got through talking, and the guy was walking off, and he said, hang on. He said, come back here, boy. And the guy came back, and he said, don't you forget to tell him this. And he said, I'm only a forgiven sinner. There's nothing more to me than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His daughter came to see him once when he couldn't talk anymore. And he reached for his Bible, and she handed it to him, and he turned to 2 Corinthians 4. Pointed like that for her to read it, and she looked at it and read it. It was, though our outer man is decaying, our inner man is being renewed day by day. Yeah, he was, like Joshua said, he was clinging to the Lord. And I hope I get to go out. I guess like Peter said, when that time comes, the Spirit of glory will rest on you and give you the ability to do those things and glorify the Lord in that way.
I was telling Brother Ford that one guy gives an account that he said when he was outside of prison, he was much more fearful for his life, you know, running from the king's men. When he got to prison, he said it was just the peace, the Lord just dumped it on him. You know, he said it was like not one day have I been, just the cup was just getting overflowing all over the place the whole time, you know. But so it's like it was given at the right time, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the joy, it's like the good wine came last. Right at the end, these guys are just can't even contain, you know, the love for Christ when you feel like it should be the worst, you know, the most discouraging. Yeah. Said he was fearful all the time outside of prison. And that's the one I sent you. Said he slept on a bed of roses once he got in prison. Said it was like laying down on rose petals every night.
Remember Corey Ten Boom's father told her that she was a little girl when the Holocaust was going on, and she was afraid, and she told her dad, what will I do if they come to get us or something like that? And he told her, he said, well, Corey, when we go for a train ride, do I give you the ticket the week before, or do I give it to you the day that we go? And he said, the Lord will give you the grace when the time comes. Don't worry about it. I thought, man, what a dad moment. Killed it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we got Randall's tomorrow night.